classes, each in its own way, are degenerate. And it is no less degenerate to use no words except those which are conspicuous, high-sounding, and poetical, avoiding what is familiar and in ordinary usage. One is, I believe, as faulty as the other. The one class are unreasonably elaborate, the other are unreasonably negligent. The former depilate the leg, the latter not even the armpit. Let us now turn to the arrangement of words. In this department, what countless varieties of fault I can show you. Some are all for abruptness and unevenness of style, purposely disarranging anything which seems to have a smooth flow of language. They would have jolts in all their transitions. They regard as strong and manly whatever makes an uneven impression on the ear. With some others, it is not so much an arrangement of words as it is a setting to music, so wheedling and soft is their gliding style. And what shall I say of that arrangement in which words are put off and, after being long waited for, just manage to come in at the end of a period? Or, again, of that softly concluding style, Cicero fashion, with a gradual and gently poised descent, always the same and always with the customary arrangement of the rhythm. Nor is the fault only in the style of the sentences, if they are either petty and childish or debasing, with more daring than modesty should allow, or if they are flowery and cloying, or if they end in emptiness, accomplishing mere sound and nothing more. Some individual makes these vices fashionable, some person who controls the eloquence of the day. The rest follow his lead and communicate the habit to each other. Thus, when Sallust was in his glory, phrases were lopped off, words came to a close unexpectedly, and obscure conciseness was equivalent to elegance. L. Aruntius, a man of rare simplicity, author of a historical work on the Punic War, was a member and a strong supporter of the Sallust school. There is a phrase in Sallust, exercitum argento fecit, meaning thereby that he recruited an army by means of money. Aruntius began to like this idea. He therefore inserted the verb facio, meaning to make or to bring about, all through his book. Hence, in one passage, brought to pass flight for our men. In another, Hiero, king of the Syracusans, brought about war. And in another, the news brought the men of Panormus to the point of surrendering to the Romans. I merely desired to give you a taste. His whole book is interwoven with such stuff as this. What Sallust reserved for occasional use, Aruntius makes into a frequent and almost continual habit. And there was a reason. For Sallust used the words, as they occurred to his mind, while the other writer went afield in search of them. So you see the results of copying another man's vices. Again, Sallust said, amid the wintry waters. Aruntius, in his first book on the Punic War, uses the words, the storm suddenly grew wintry. And elsewhere, wishing to describe an exceptionally cold year, he says, the whole year was like winter. And, in another passage, then he dispatched 60 transports of light draft besides the soldiers and the necessary sailors amid a wintry storm. And he continues to bolster many passages with this metaphor. In a certain place, Sallust gives the words, amid civil war, he seeks reminders of justice and virtue. And Aruntius cannot restrain himself from mentioning at once in the first book that there were extensive reminders concerning Regulus. These and similar faults, which imitation stamps upon one's style, are not necessarily indications of loose standards or of debased mind, for they are bound to be personal and peculiar to the writer, enabling one to judge thereby of a particular author's temperament. Just as an angry man will talk in an angry way, an excitable man in a flurried way, and an effeminate man in a style that is soft and unresisting. You note this tendency in those who pluck out or thin out their beards, or who closely shear and shave the upper lip while preserving the rest of the hair and allowing it to grow, or in those who wear cloaks of outlandish colors, who wear transparent togas, and who never deign to do anything which will escape general notice. They endeavor to excite and attract men's attention, and they put up even with censure, provided that they can